This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. It is Monday, May 22nd. We have Pete Sampson back from Seattle with Tim O'Malley. I'm Tim Priester. Pete got an opportunity to speak with the Notre Dame Club of Greater Seattle. Also got a Mumford & Sons and U2 concert out of it as well. Tell us about that.
It was a great show. It was $100 well spent at Quest Field on Sunday night. Yeah, it was. I don't think I'd seen U2 since they played at Notre Dame, which was back in like 2003, maybe 2002. Incredible show. So if you're in a location where U2 is coming or within a four-hour car ride of it, you should go to that show. It's great.
What did the Notre Dame fans of the greater Seattle area want to know about?
Let's see. There was a lot of what the hell happened conversation. VJ Beecham's tournament performance. I think there's, when I go out and do these alumni events, and Tim, I'm sure you're the same way, like, you know, go to Milwaukee or something, there's a lot of like, what is going on? I go out in the initial sort of charge of these things was to introduce the incoming class, and people are like, okay, could you get through that so we can talk about whether Brian Kelly's going to be back, who the next coach would be.
There are plenty of talking points. There's no doubt about that.
Man, so it's I did sort of like a 15-minute quick wrap-up of the class, and then it was just 90 straight minutes of like rapid-fire questions. And it's cool because it's all just sort of, it's in a brewery. People are hanging out. I don't have to worry about anything that I say on a message board. So it was fun. It's a cool group out there. I really enjoyed doing them.
Well, good. Well, welcome back. And, while you were gone or as you were returning, you know, some news with Notre Dame basketball, Prentice Hubb, the four-star commitment, the combo guard. He's a combo guard. Notre Dame likes him as a point guard. He has been playing shooting guard because he's got a 5'7" teammate that's going to Miami, Chris Likes. So they will be playing against each other in the future. Some rumblings about Notre Dame and the ACC joining the ACC. We've heard that before. I don't really know why that's even necessary anymore. Now that once Jack Swarbrick created that relationship with the ACC, and of course Elizé Mack has made grades, so Notre Dame's tight end position is as good as anybody's in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that was good to see, and I think we've sort of talked about it on the podcast where we've been able to sort of peck around the fringes here, and so we're not just listening to what Brian Kelly says about, I expect Elizé Mack to make grades. Like, privately, they thought this was going to happen. Like, he was on track.
Okay, right.
Yeah, but it wasn't like he's just coasting through. Yeah. So that is really significant news. It changes the whole dynamic of the offense, whether he scored a touchdown yet or not.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you got to say Elizé Mack was motivated, right?
I mean,
he has been absolutely motivated since the bad news, 9 months ago or 10 months ago. I give the kid a lot of credit. He's Notre Dame first. I don't know that he ever wavered about coming back. Maybe he did. Maybe there's some stuff behind closed doors. But publicly, he was all in. I give the kid a lot of credit.
He's pretty public about it, too. Yeah. So if he wavered behind closed doors, good for him for not announcing he was wavering, because he announced everything else. But, hey, the first practice we went to, I've never seen a guy more involved in a practice, whether he was starting or suspended. And Brian Kelly joked, of course, that's not going to continue. I think at the end of camp, he looked a little defeated and realized that games were going to be played without him. But good for him coming back. And I say that because he's really good at football, because this would not be as big of news. The standard guy that gets suspended, he is a true difference maker out there.
Because he's beyond a tight end. He's wide receiver-like, and they're loaded at that position. Brock Wright, as good as Brock Wright is, and we can see he's going to be good, he's going to have a hard time getting on the field this year, at least at tight end. And that's with a two tight end type offense that Chip Long likes. So, I mean, really,
they'll get him on the field. If it was a one tight end offense, he'd be really back. Right. But he'll get on.
I think Nick Wisher's heavily involved there too. So it's, reps are going to be a little bit difficult. And I don't know if they're going to be running from two tight end all the time, but that's basically what we saw throughout the spring.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we want to really see in the fall.
Well, especially when your tight end core is as talented as it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have somebody who can move around like Elizé Mack. I think this happened on Monday that the Tim Brando ACC. I guess I don't get it. Like, what's the? I mean, I realize this happens every offseason when nothing else is going on. Maybe it was because the ACC meetings were happening. There's, you know, a lot of people talking. Brando's there. Some whispers of it. But it, from a Notre Dame perspective, why? Until it's a,
until
2025
a football
playoff access issue where there's like you have to win a conference to make the playoff, I don't. It's not happening.
They're not joining until 2026 at the earliest.
They've got ACC games scheduled through 2037.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got ACC games scheduled. And, you know, I mean, obviously that can change. The makeup of the ACC can change. But they're scheduled for 25 more years. Isn't that right? Was it 2037?
When was the number? But they are set through this. I mean, realistically speaking, through the college football playoff, unless it, something changes to the college football playoff setup, through 2025, they will be a independent team that plays five or six ACC teams a year.
Well, and that's why I marveled at the time when it happened, and I still do today. The deal that Jack Swarbrick swung with ACC, I don't want to say highway robbery, but I mean, he got everything basically that he wanted. He had a landing spot for all of his other sports. It's been great for basketball, absolutely fantastic for basketball, men's basketball anyway.
But good for the ACC too.
It really has been. I as a former Notre Dame baseball player, and they're struggling. They just got into the ACC tournament as a 12th team. It's tough in that conference, man.
It's bad for baseball.
Bad short term, good long term. If you can start to make some inroads, we thought they were 2 years ago when they went to the NCAA tournament. They've now finished seventh, which means last in the Atlantic Division of the ACC the last 2 years. So it's tough, you know, for a couple of the sports going into the ACC. But it's a great deal. I don't see how it's even an issue anymore.
Well, one of the sports that it is great for is men's basketball. Probably the greatest for men's basketball based on what they get there. And I think that the Prentice Hub commitment for people who haven't really tracked this, Gonzaga Prep in D.C., I think on Scout, he's 27th
or 27th
nationally, which is the high among recruiting services. But I think you'd have to look at this as a commitment that is more in the Taryn Francis mold, where you just went out and got a great guy that a lot of other programs wanted. It's not Demetrius Jackson, who grew up down the street.
Yeah, right.
And they really haven't signed anybody at this level. I mean, certainly way above Beecham, way above Gibbs.
DJ Harvey
was
top
like
100.
Yeah, a little bit below that. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, really, if you want to look at it that way, back-to-back, top 50 guys out of region. I mean, I realize that Notre Dame basketball have used D.C. as their backyard, and they've done a good job carving that out. But these last two commitments feel like, oh yeah, you went to the Elite Eight 2 years in a row type of commitment.
Absolutely.
And you need to get some of those guys.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Prentice Hub listed 6'3", probably a little bit underneath that. Played, you know, as I mentioned, shooting guard this year because he's got a teammate that they list him at 5'7". I think he's 5'5", but he's really, Chris likes is really spectacular and going to Miami. But, you know, so he's a guy that can play both positions, but I think Notre Dame's bringing him in as a point guard. Matt Farrell will be gone after this year. TJ Gibbs will be a junior.
Shooting guard.
Well, yeah. He'll be a junior when Prentice Hub comes in. And if TJ Gibbs doesn't improve his ball handling tremendously over last year, then Prentice Hub will definitely be the point guard. Otherwise, he'll share that with Gibbs.
But it's a good defensive perimeter. We talked about this right before the podcast started. In 2 years, you'll have athletes with quick hands and feet in Harvey, Hub, Gibbs, who has great defensive hands, and Pfluger. Now you just need the piece in the middle to complement that. It doesn't matter how many guys are good defensively on the outside, but that's crucial upcoming in both graduate transfer possibilities and recruiting.
We have one of our questions in segment two, Burning Up the Boards, asked about that. We'll get into that more. But in addition to the guys that you're saying that they will have on the perimeter, I think Notre Dame feels like they have a shot at Luther Muhammad and Robbie Carmody. And so now you're really loaded on
and
the perimeter.
You're doing something Notre Dame has not done, recruiting over guys, which is great.
Yeah.
Somebody going to be unhappy they don't get to play, and that somebody won't be a bad player like it usually is. Or an average player, I shouldn't say bad, an average player. It's going to be a good player, and that's a problem that good college programs have.
We'll talk more about the big guys in segment two, but Pete, you've been following Malik Zaire and
for years.
For years now. It seems like years.
It's like your job or something.
Yeah. he actually has completed his graduate transfer year and is moving on to the next graduate transfer. But yeah, there was some reports that he was going to decide on Friday, which I shot down because they don't make any sense. Because he wants to go to Florida. The SEC meetings have to come and go for that to happen because Florida needs to get a waiver to take a graduate transfer. This is something that I said in January, and nothing has changed.
Last week was full of fake Notre Dame news. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. From the conference to Malik Sayer.
I don't get it. Because if he doesn't end up at Florida, this whole semester off was a waste. That was the one school that he wanted to go to that was going to require him waiting until summer. He could have been at Wisconsin in January. I know there's been some talk about Texas. The quote that I got about that is, hell no, and that offense gets you killed. He has no interest in being the next Greg Ward. Harvard, I don't know what that's about. That doesn't make any sense either. So he wants to go to Florida. Florida wants him at Florida. And Florida has told him to expect that waiver to come through so he can go to Florida. So unless the SEC really, at the 11th hour, I believe their meetings are next week or at the end of this week. Probably not over Memorial Day weekend. Unless something changes there and they backtrack on everything that they've said that they're going to do, Malik Sayer will be at Florida next year.
And that's good. And he wants to be in a pro-style yep. attack, and that's good. I think the fact that he's not really a pro-style quarterback will be exposed in that scenario. But
I don't think they have any pro-style quarterbacks on their roster.
I'm sure they not. I'm sure they don't, but...
I know what you're saying. Though,
you know what I'm saying. Yeah, okay. And I understand why Malik Sayer wants to do that. More power to him.
Oh,
that's
the right
great.
Call. You're not looking to have one but good year of college type.
Jack, find the film review of Malik Sayer coming out of high school. And the question was always accuracy and remains accuracy. He's not an NFL level. He's not an SEC level pro-style quarterback. But if he can pull that off and get a shot and with a great chance to improve, more power to him.
Yeah, I mean, these are your Felipe Franks, who is just all... That's one of the quarterbacks. Austin Appleby, I believe, is still there. And then, I think Luke Del Rio is the other one. He should be able to at least create something out of nothing in a way that their quarterbacks couldn't at all last year. And look, they've got so much talent everywhere else on that team. I know they lost a bunch on defense, but it's Florida. They recruit a lot of good defensive athletes all the time. He just needs to be pretty good down there, and they should win a bunch of games. They'll be in contention for the SEC East. That would be, to me, if I was him, that would be the first place I would want to go, because they really need help at the quarterback position, but they've got good guys everywhere else. So you get a shot at the LSU's and Alabama's, maybe in SEC title games. You get the Tennessee, Georgia type matchups. Like, that would be a fun place to spend 1 year.
Yeah, this is quite a schedule he gets to play. Do you know who they open with? Remember this?
Michigan, right?
Yeah. They open with Michigan and with Florida State, and in between have Tennessee, LSU, A&M, Georgia.
Yeah, in addition to being surrounded by a lot of talent in Florida, he's also going to be looking into a bunch of talent.
Wow. Right there. Michigan's a year is going to be fun.
You can see why Florida would not want to roll out with Luke Del Rio.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, I totally understand where Florida is going with this. I hope it works out for Malik, because he's invested all this time.
Yeah, your
and
point
plotted
is he's a
out.
Better dual threat quarterback than pro.
Yeah, I don't think
he's making
going
a
to...
career effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is a smart decision.
Yeah, so that would make. Hey, I would watch a lot of Florida football. I'll certainly be watching that Michigan
will.
Game.
Some good games on here. You might as well.
All right. Well, that's it for segment one, Irish Illustrated Insider. We got a bunch of questions for readers, so we'll get into all that next segment two.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. And our first question from AWW Tone. Comes directly from the message board, I believe, is a good one posed over the weekend. Excluding Alabama and Ohio State, what programs can we more reasonably compare to ND today? Who is Notre Dame's current peer group of schools?
This was an interesting topic on the message board, because I spent a lot of time talking about Alabama and Ohio State, just sort of a, well, there's where these guys are, because ultimately you have to run into them at some point.
Yeah, play them both, too, in the last
if you're
going
to win a national title. But I think Stanford is the most interesting because I think you could argue they're not really a Notre Dame's. They're not a Notre Dame peer right now. They're better. And I'm curious to at some point sit down with Jack Swarbrick because he has a Stanford degree as well, I believe. You know, do you look at Stanford as an aspirational peer? Like, if they're doing it, we can do it? Or do you look at it more as like, if they're doing it, wait a minute, why aren't we doing it now? I'm not really sure what Notre Dame's perspective is on that, because Stanford runs this program completely differently from Notre Dame in a bunch of different ways. One of them is they redshirt a lot more. They're an older team. And they have, an identity that plays to the kind of kids they can get into school there, where they're not running, spread offense, where they're trying to get as fast as they possibly can. I think they're trying to get as tough as they possibly can, and Notre Dame's sort of going the other way. They're more of a speed finesse team at times. Maybe Notre Dame will be different this year, but Stanford is sort of, maybe that's who we should be talking about more than Ohio State and Alabama.
It's an interesting question, because if you asked it a year ago today, you could easily say Notre Dame peer was Oklahoma or Michigan or Florida State, some of the double-digit winning teams. You ask the question a year later, and you're comparing them to Duke and Syracuse and Iowa State and Illinois, you know, record-wise. But realistically, looking at it in total, North Carolina? I mean, North Carolina won 10 games a couple years ago. North Carolina can go 7-6 in any year. That's kind of a peer right now, right? Virginia Tech. I mean, terms of just up and down and where the mean is for a program.
I might be mistaken, but I know that I went through sort of the Brian Kelly era, how other Power 5 teams had fared during that time. And I think Notre Dame had the same record as Kansas State. That may have been before last year. So, I think, look, Notre Dame needs to bring it up a couple notches here.
I quickly looked, because we knew it was something like this. Stanford, since Brian Kelly came to Notre Dame, 12-11, 12-11, 8-12-10. Those are their wins. 12-11, 12-11, 8-12-10. As opposed to 8-8-12-9-8-10-4. And you can throw out 4. You know, it's not who they are. You could also throw out 12 then for Notre Dame too. If you just get rid of the best and the worst,
so it's still not. It's not. Well, yeah, no, they're not. Exactly. They're not to the level where Stanford
but
is.
But that's
right now.
That is a valid question. It's a great question for Pete to try and ask.
I was
to ask Swarbrick. Not don't mention Stanford. I thought that was a good point of the message board. Yeah. Don't say the team name Stanford because it's
whatever
not going to deal well. You won't get the answer. But I mean, you're saying North Carolina. That's just.
Well, that's about where they are now, right? I mean, an 8-5 season is like kind
of
par for the course.
I would take up a little bit if you're going to go. We got to go over 8 years, right? We got to go over an 8-year span because that's their 7-8-year span. They played for a national title and they played in a Fiesta Bowl, and North Carolina is not that. So you got to take. I would certainly, if you're a Notre Dame fan, trade not a 4-win season, but a couple of 8-win seasons for that 12-win season.
I would too.
That's a big deal.
North Carolina, I think it's worth acknowledging. I mean, they played Clemson in an ACC title game, and they were sort of like, well, does North Carolina deserve to be in the playoff? I mean, they made a playoff push.
They made a push like Notre Dame did 2 years ago. Right. But then you got to throw in that other year for Notre Dame.
Right, which they didn't come close.
Right.
So. Okay, lost 65-82. What record does Brian Kelly need to meet in 2017 to be safe for 2018? Will a 9-3 season work without a solid bowl victory?
Easily. 9-3. I really think I'm putting this in a column today. It's a 2-year investment in Brian Kelly that they made, unless it's a relative repeat of last year.
At least two.
Yeah. But unless if you have anything close to last year in one of these 2 years, at the end of 2 years, you can stop.
A good way.
Even thinking about
it. Tie goes to the incumbent on that one. You know, if it's debatable, I think he'll win the debate.
14 wins the next 2 years, that would not get him a third year, right?
Probably not.
14 should not be enough the next 2 years, no.
Because you can't find a reasonable way for that to happen. Five and nine is not something you want. I mean,
16
that's
minimum.
Tell me how the 16 comes, and then you might work out, right?
Yeah, and that's why I don't like putting just numbers it's not a number.
But
it's
9-3, people, every the
nine
mantra.
Is a number, and that's a good one.
Yeah, nine's a good
number. The mantra is it's going up if that happens.
You know, we'll know better the level of schedule that they're going to face, but looks pretty good right now. 9 wins, 9 out of 12 games. with those That'd five road games. Really, I mean, let's get O'Malley start on road games, because
actually they can start road games,
right? Because
they don't start, they show up late.
Would you take 3 out of 5 road wins right now?
Yes, that's what the 10th,
would you take 2?
That's what the Jalen Smith team did. 3 out of 5 road wins,
right?
The best team they've had since
you'd
2012.
You'd take 2, right?
I would take 2, yeah, because I would take 3 because I think they'll get 2. So okay. I would take 3. Yeah, that's what the 2015 team did.
You're that confident they're going to get 2 road wins this year?
I think they'll get 2 road wins out of 5.
I agree, but yeah. I'm just
asking
you.
So I would take
you.
3 because they went 3-2 with a much better roster, with pros all over the roster in 2015.
The NC State game at home, I'm telling you, man. Yeah, I think
that's different. That's separate, though. I don't think they're going
undefeated. No, it is. That just came to mind, and I think most people are tuned in now to where NC State is. Dave Doran, the guy that finally beat a team with a winning record when he beat North Carolina at the end of last year.
That ruined Pete's but that research is project.
Yet another North Carolina-Notre Dame comparison.
Yeah,
they both lost to NC State.
That's a quality team. That is a quality team. Yeah. If Dave Doran can do a better job of, based upon the people that I know that know Dave Doran and his relationship with people, so I'll say if Dave Doran can do a better job of communicating with people, they should be a 9 win. That they should press for 9 wins.
You remember that we did the pregame incident analysis before the hurricane or during the hurricane, and there was not a nice word said in the press box from the North Carolina State people.
Oh,
Dave
no.
Doran, it was amazing. I mean, they've never... Just
have went. I ever said publicly, I've said it to you guys, I don't know if I've ever said it publicly, the comment about Dave Doran. Dave Doran has the personality of a grape, and it's a sour grape.
That's actually... But did we... So we all assume 9-3 is the season that he's absolutely 100%.
Oh,
no
yeah.
one's even questioning that, right? That he's...
Yeah. And I would... Yeah. 9 is... That's easy.
Yeah.
8 is room for debate.
And then it gets...
And I would also say, like, on the bowl victory part of it, I would give less than 1 game's credence to a bowl victory or a bowl loss, because it's just such a one-off...
Well, especially at 9-3.
...situation.
You beat Ohio State in a bowl game, it's pretty cool. If you beat,
yes.
Yeah.
But you're probably not going to get to Ohio
State with nine
wins.
No, you're not. You're not. All
right. B1GB0B. Basketball recruiting question. Great that we got another point guard, but... What is really needed is a good power forward. What are the prospects of getting a 4-star power forward?
I don't think they're going to get a 4-star power forward in this recruiting class. They may get Juwan Durham, the transfer from UConn, but he's going to have to sit out a year. You know, right now, their power forwards are, I mean, you know, really Bonzi Colson is your ultimate.
He's a pretty good one.
Yeah, he's a good one. And Austin Torres is a power forward. And John Mooney and Elijah Burns. So they're kind of stacked with them. But, Mooney and Burns are their future at that position. They both have 3 years of eligibility heading into next season. But it's my understanding that probably, and it's going to be a big recruiting class, because after next year, only Pfluger, Gibbs, Burns, Jogo, Mooney, and Harvey are coming back from the current team. And then, of course, you're going to add Prentice Hub. But... I'm not sure they're going to get a power forward other than Juwan Durham, who's kind of, he's 6'11". He's not a real powerful guy right now, but he would fit that mold. So that's probably going to have to come in the next recruiting class. And the two guys that were thrown my way as the strongest possibilities right now are Joey Hauser, who's a 6'8", 210-pounder out of Mequon, Wisconsin. He could end up at Wisconsin. He could end up at Marquette. And then there's another kid, a 3-star, Sadiq Bey, who, is really only about 185 pounds right now, but they kind of project him. And he's from Washington, D.C. He's a guy that could grow into that position as well. But as far as power forwards right now, I don't think you're going to see one in the freshman class coming up.
And I think the key to this is that Mooney's as good as a lot of people think he can become. Because Burns then can just be a guy that helps you defense
right.
and rebounding, and he has the body for it. So it doesn't matter if Burns is a below-the-rim player as long as he is a do-the-dirty-work below-the-rim player.
I'm pretty confident he's going to be that guy.
I do,
How
too.
About you?
I am. I just think he starting off with the foot issue is a problem. Then he get buried because you don't want a big bench. The only odd thing is that they needed help there earlier in the season. They didn't really turn to him. Probably isn't. He's not the best he'll be at this point.
Do you have more info on this, Pete?
No, not in terms of targets. I was just going to mention in terms of Elijah Burns. I'd like to see him supplant Austin Torres
as that
and
guy.
And, like, let's see some development moving forward, because I think we know what Austin Torres is.
Yeah.
They want... They need to have a better talent.
The thing is, though, every time you put Austin Torres in game, within the first 17 seconds, he makes a play that's positive for you.
He's a good... I like him 2 minutes and a half, though. I don't
I agree with that. He's coming back for a fifth year. Yeah, he's coming back for a fifth year, and obviously he's accepted that.
One last thing on Prentice Hub there. I was talking to somebody who works over Purcell, and, I mean, he said that next to Jaron Grant, he thinks this guy could be a cut below that, which, I mean, if that happens.
Yes, great.
You got a really good point guard.
Yeah, I heard the same comments, so we're probably talking to the same person. Yeah. But, Hub's release point is low. It's completely off the dribble. It's kind of from the hip off
Jared's
the dribble.
Jared's shot looked terrible at the beginning. It's a set shot with 2 feet. Right. Yeah. So
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure his release point is going to get much higher from where it is. And that's fine. But at 6'2.5", maybe 6'3", you face that length on the perimeter. When you're playing against a zone, it's difficult to get that shot over. Which is why. That was the one thing that I hated about losing Matt Ryan, because that dude could shoot over any zone at his size. And once he got locked in, I thought he was going to be pretty good. But
look, if Jaron Grant's name comes up again, once they see him on campus, that's all you need.
He's a real stoic. Prentice Hub's a real unemotional, stoic kind of player. Really good athlete. Plays above the rim when he has an opportunity to do that.
Jaron Grant's my Will Fuller when I talk post game after Notre Dame game for Pete, right? This amazement at their greatness. Yeah.
So good. Golden by name. With all your travels to away games over the years, what stadium has the best pregame atmosphere, and which one has the best in-game atmosphere, in your opinion? You can include Notre Dame.
For what? You know, I never thought of it. It was an interesting question because I never thought of it in terms of pregame and during game. But, I mean, in terms of two jump out at me pregame. One is outside the stadium. One is inside the stadium. Ooh. Outside the stadium is the LSU tailgate. Now, when Notre Dame was whipping LSU, I saw their fans leave in masses. But pregame outside LSU, pregame inside... Is there anything better than what we saw than Clemson?
Inside Clemson was amazing. For me, outside, you know what? Tennessee is something else.
That was really cool.
Well, I consider that in-game.
I like the river and all that out there.
Oh, yeah, too, okay, that's good. Yeah,
I think
amazing.
Tennessee is the first that came to mind. Clemson was amazing, but remember, Tennessee had a bad Notre Dame team. I'm talking about the most recent time. I saw that when Notre Dame was number one. That was just the most... ridiculous thing.
I would list Tennessee as a...
Yeah, but Clemson had a really good Notre Dame team and a great game coming in. That helps
they
the
come
atmosphere.
Up in buses. You can see them driving up, and then they run down the hill.
Open-air press box is huge for us at Clemson because we were dry. And when you could hear and feel the stadium like that, that's great. That's one thing I really wish Notre Dame would have thought of. I know it's different weather, but...
An open-air
press box? Michigan has... Michigan's windows open up for nice games. You know, they open it up so you can feel the atmosphere a little bit more.
Pete, your stadiums, game day stadiums.
I thought walking up to Tennessee, I thought was amazing. I don't remember much about, a great intro. I would say, just to be different, because Clemson was great, I thought Oklahoma was amazing. They're firing off guns. They got the Boomer Schooner thing coming out. I thought their pregame video was the best that I had seen. Is they really incorporated the history of Oklahoma. And I think there was a shot at the end where Stoops and Switzer are on the screen together and people are just freaking losing it. But Michigan's...
The loudest.
That was the loudest I've ever been. And that was probably the loudest game, too. So I think in-game Michigan, pre-game, you could probably have a toss-up between Clemson, Michigan, and Oklahoma. Those would be mine.
See, I wouldn't list Michigan because I've been there so many times. And
it's changed so much, though, how loud it is
I'm
now.
Saying like the 2011, 2013.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree with Oklahoma. I mean, I thought Texas opening night last year was pretty awesome.
That was great. Nebraska opening night with Nebraska. The black shirts walk.
See, now
they,
I would
they
list...
show him walking on the video screen and the fans start going crazy.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one.
I would list Nebraska... post-game because post-game, because as the Notre Dame players filed through to get to their locker room, I've wrote about this in the past. So the Nebraska fans were lined up, like shaking their hands. I'd never seen anything like that.
They were getting killed at the half, and Nebraska, I was actually in the stands at the area where they were walking to that.
That was awesome.
They were getting murdered. It's totally like, keep your head up. And, like, patting Notre Dame players on the shoulder. Now, I mean, they knew they were going to win. But, you know, it was a very friendly atmosphere.
Penn State whiteout. That was pretty awesome.
With Clawson?
Ohio State in the mid-90s. That was a violent place to be.
Wow. Well, you go violent, then you have one more to go, right?
So for me, the top one, of course, is Miami 89, which is
trying to kill you.
Never been anything like that.
I mean, we're a little snarky about Notre Dame there, but in-game USC...
Amazing.
This is the thing. We don't ever go to Clemson to see Clemson-Pittsburgh.
That's why I mentioned Notre Dame was a big game for Clemson. It was a huge thing.
We only see Notre Dame and Notre Dame road games.
Let alone Clemson-Wake Forest.
Right. And when Notre Dame travels, that I made a comment about Tennessee in 04. They're a 500 team. Notre Dame with Davey, they end up winning the game. Of course, a weird upset. But that was, I mean, when Notre Dame goes there, the fans are into it. It doesn't matter how bad they are.
Yeah.
They are really into that game. When I got off it was opener in Omaha, getting off the plane in Omaha, or opener in Lincoln. Off the plane in Omaha, it says, welcome to the game of the century, South Bend fans. Notre Dame was coming off, you know, I mean, I guess they're coming off a good year, but it's, think about that. I mean.
Let me throw in one pregame. And this is going way back, I get that. But green jersey game, 1977, bigger. USC. pretty amazing.
Yeah, Notre Dame has great moment games and great atmosphere and great games. It's been a while and they don't have a continuously great atmosphere.
Pete makes a great point because we're not in those atmospheres game after game. So you don't know. I would imagine that Clemson is pretty special, especially as good as they are now.
I think Florida State was the best. Florida State at Notre Dame was the best pregame I saw at Notre Dame because I was a junior and people were there. I mean, it was just weird to have ESPN there on Monday for the game. Leading up to it, there's people sleeping outside for the four tickets that might come available and, you know, send pizza to everybody that's outside waiting for their tickets. And it was just, as I said, Sports Illustrated had a cover the week before the game previewing the Notre Dame-Florida State game. I think that's impossible nowadays, obviously.
Right.
So that was one, because I think their Notre Dame was a... people bring up Miami, but Florida State, Notre Dame was such a bigger game at the time because no one knew who was going to win. Like, people expected Miami to beat Notre Dame in 88. That was the upset. So.
Yeah. UND 63, how much can and will the football coaches work with the players over the summer? Has there been a loosening of restrictions?
Yeah, a couple years ago there was.
Yeah, I think we're going into the third year of OTAs.
Yeah, that's basically what they are. I want to say it's 8 hours.
It is 8 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it third year or second year?
I think it's the third.
I think it's the third year, too.
I think this is the third year. So that's it. That's how much they're working with them. You know, are they watching film in the summer? Going to the office voluntarily? Yeah. But in terms of actual practice and stuff.
Yeah, but a player can visit an assistant coach, right, and talk about, hey, we're going out on the... Yeah, I mean, they're going out on the practice field.
They run 7-on-7 stuff. It's, I mean...
With one quarterback this time?
Yes.
Leading the way?
With one quarterback leading the way. So it's, look, and this is stuff that goes on everywhere. So this is, it's like, a lot of times I get a little too carried away. I was like, wow, they're really working hard in the offseason. Well, you know what? Everyone is. But I guess maybe we shouldn't say that. But like at Alabama and Ohio State and Stanford and North Carolina and whatever comparison we want to make, they're all doing the OTAs. They're all lifting weights. They're all throwing 7-on-7.
You know, there really is at Alabama and Ohio State, there isn't a choice as to whether you're going to work hard or not, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'll get passed up.
You'll transfer.
But I wanted to point out, I did mean that it's a good thing that there's one quarterback leading things. I wasn't being sarcastic. I was being sarcastic about last year. But that's another good thing about changing coaches is the expectation for this summer, I think, would be heightened because it's not status quo. I mean, you better be doing all this work on your own because they don't have any allegiance to you.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have the allegiance of these players.
It's sort of like the positive of going 4-8. That's just like, this is the last echo of that until training camp starts. But if you can't have a great offseason after what happened last year, something's wrong with you.
All right, this question is too long for me to read. I'll screw it up. So somebody,
I will go. Irish Cajun, a separate question, but related as it applies to the defensive secondary. If the Irish play well on defense this year, wouldn't recruiting explode? I'm worried we're casting too wide of a net this early in the game, and if the defense gets it together, we'll have to be beating them off with sticks. We're being selective on offense and linebacker, but perhaps not selective enough at DL and in the secondary.
I don't know. They turned down Malik Van at D end, and I'm not sure how hard they're pushing for P.J. Mustafa now. So I'm not sure that that necessarily applies to the defensive line. And then, Pete, you have better perspective on this than me. But, I mean, in the secondary, they have to cast a wide net now for corners. And just because an offer's out there doesn't mean that you'll necessarily accept that. What's your perspective on that?
Well, okay. One good way to look at it is they have five commits on defense. Derek Allen, the Adamalola twins. Now, if you want to say that Justin Adamalola is a little bit of a reach, okay. But Jason Adamalola is a defensive tackle.
No school's going to get one without the other.
Yeah, exactly. And Jason is a stud. That guy has been outstanding all offseason. He's a guy that Ohio State really wants. So I also really want him. And then the linebackers they got were, you know, Bo Bauer, who they evaluated last summer. I like him more than David Adams. He's much longer, taller. I think he's similar position. I mean, if you put him at the mic, I think he could be great. And then Ovia Gufo, I guess I'm less sure about, but he's good enough to score an invite to the opening final. So if you're concerned about the offers, don't be, because they're all conditional. Notre Dame has a bunch of offers out there that are like, we're going to offer you, but we need you to come to camp to work out. We're going to offer you, but you're our fourth choice at this position. So I wouldn't worry too much about the conditional offers at this point. If you're looking at Notre Dame's commitment list, if suddenly you decide to start taking them on, then I think you're going to have a little bit more of a concern. But, look at the defensive line, for example. They've got the Adamalola twins. Really good chance to get Thomas Booker, defensive end out of D.C. area. I think there's a very good chance they'll get Jason Away, who's a defensive end out of New Jersey, who I think has got all sorts of upside all over the place. He's played 8 career games.
Yeah, he's
really 6'5", 236. Ohio State offered him recently. Penn State's on him. Harvard is on him.
I kind of like him at tight end more than DN, but I think his upside's great. His upside's greater at DN.
Yeah, so let's say you end up with Jamian Franklin, Thomas Booker, Jason Away, and the Adamalola twins. That's a really good 5-man haul on the defensive line. Now, the secondary corner, I get it. It's hard to look at their board and think, okay, this is the Jamian Franklin at corner, or this is the Thomas Booker at corner. Outside of Houston Griffin, it's a little bit muddy. Yeah,
I'm always more concerned when the net's smaller as opposed to larger, especially at this stage of the process. I don't think there's a downside, as Pete explains. You know, these offers come with caveats to them as far as coming and proving yourself, which is the way to do it. So I guess I understand where the question's coming from, but I wouldn't get overly concerned about a wide net because they need that at corner.
The other thing is, if the defense plays really well this year, then Notre Dame will win 10 games, so you don't have to worry as much about it. Just be happy.
I do agree with the beginning of the question, where it says if the Irish play well on defense, wouldn't recruiting explode? Yes. I think you saw that. And that's as really, really well. Like, to move the needle is 11-1, which is probably not happening. But, I mean, you look back at when they went 12-0 in the regular season, suddenly it's Folston, Redfield, Greg Bryant. You know, and say what you want about how those careers turned out. Eddie Vanderdoes, again, say whatever you want to say about how the careers turned out. When those commitments were coming in and those guys were signing, you're like, holy crap. I mean, this is what happens when Notre Dame goes above and beyond and really moves the needle with wins.
SR5452, with the Crossroads Project finishing up, what do you think future student athletes will be most impressed with? And what do you guys like best about the improvement project?
I mean, we haven't really been in there to see what the video board is going to look like. I want to write about that this summer, which seems weird that I want to do a story about a television. But I really like to get into the programming that they want to put on, just the technical aspects of it. They were installing speakers last week, and it's the same company that did, I think, Luke Soil Stadium. Basically very high-end athletic facilities, NFL, NBA type stuff. So I'm curious more about that. I think that I don't know how the video board couldn't be the thing that is going to resonate the most, not just in games, but if you're a recruit, and you, every recruit that comes in walks down the tunnel into the stadium, you walk down the tunnel, and they have, like, your highlight tape and you in a Notre Dame uniform on there, like, I think that would probably register a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything more important than how it plays out with the... I mean, you know, you could probably do a little bit better playlist, for lack of a better word, from what they've had in the stadium. I mean, you could maybe have a little bit more effort put into that if you're not going to be using the band, which I think... Actually, we talked about this in basketball. They've really upgraded... I really liked how in basketball this year, the video that you saw at the beginning of the year was not the video you saw during the year. They started implementing big win highlights. That's right. That's huge.
Yeah.
And it's great, and it's always good to have, you know, tie in the past at Notre Dame no matter what. You got to really be able to tie in what's going on in the present.
Get those Temple highlights up
there. Yeah, get that. I mean, you know, come back after Notre Dame beats Virginia 2 years ago to the Georgia Tech game, and you show Will Fuller score the game-winning touchdown. It's not quiet. In that stadium.
Yes.
But if you just announce, you know, the members of the whatever squad that are graduating this year, it's a little bit more quiet.
They're going to be, I mean, we all know the makeup of Notre Dame fans. There are going to be mixed reactions to this.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you. I meant this in basketball. I really think if they use the band more in basketball instead of the playlist they use, that the crowd would be in it more.
No, I agree with that.
Because now, that's
an enclosed environment. But, you know, mixed reactions, because it is going to be, going to be very, very different. It's going to be very loud. It's important that they, you know, you've got to have somebody making the right decisions on how to use the scoreboard and the sound as well.
That's tricky.
And even in the prehistoric type usage Notre Dame's had in recent years, that hasn't always worked really well. So,
which stadium were we in? It was way too loud the last 2 years. The scoreboard. I mean, the Jumbotron. You remember? Was it Clemson?
Clemson was absurdly loud.
Yeah. We were very close to it. That was part of it.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, and I wouldn't think that Notre Dame is going to, or they're going to choose to be a little bit quieter as opposed to a little bit louder with the it'll be loud enough,
yeah.
I'm sure, either way. But that's going to be fascinating. That's going to be something that we're going to be, you know, we're in a press box and kind of isolated
that's
by
I mean.
It. But you're not going to be, you can't be isolated from that kind of sound system.
I'll be curious to see how quickly, I mean, we'll get there fast, how quickly fans get to a similar point as they did with field turf. I think I said this when I went, I was like, you're really going to notice it for the first game, and then you're never going to notice it again. The video board shouldn't be that way. And that's, I think, O'Malley, your point is like, if you're updating it and doing it right, you should always be conscious of it being there, opposed to being in the background.
Was there a sillier thing than saying the tradition of Notre Dame real
grass?
I mean, come on. And there's a lot of traditions in Notre Dame. That doesn't fall under the category of tradition.
They didn't have field turf. It was part of the reason. It didn't exist.
Right,
but if you just went on the field in November, you knew it had to happen. If you like
God,
grass,
it
smells
ridiculous.
Good. I like grass, but it was.
It
dirt.
Doesn't.
It was terrible.
It's great. It's great now. It's not even an issue anymore. The surface that you play on should never be an issue, and it clearly had become an issue in Notre Dame Stadium.
Yeah, if it's good enough for NFL teams, for Notre Dame too.
It works. It works.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for this Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. This podcast will be back June 5th. We're not going to record something on Memorial Day. Tim, are you going to do the Indy 500 again?
For the first time in 35 years, I am not.
Oh, okay. But Irish Illustrated Recruiting Extra will be back on Thursday. I'll be joined, as usual, with Kevin Sinclair to talk recruiting. Hopefully, we'll have another recruit on. We had Jimmy and Franklin on last week. If you haven't listened to that, you can download it. Pretty insightful interview. I think you can see why he's almost certainly going to end up at Notre Dame if you listen to that. So until... This podcast returns on June 5th. I'm Pete Sampson with Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley. You've been listening to Irish Illustrated Insider.